Is Scott, right? Scott from Bowie, Maryland.
Yes, sir.
Come around with Paul.
Hi, everybody. I'm Scott Stevenson. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Scott.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me out. I do come from Bowie, Maryland, which is pretty close to 2 hours away. Going a little more for rush hour. And I came with a small little crew. This is kind of how we travel in AA. So speaking at meetings is probably my least favorite thing to do in AA. And but it's a simple job, right? So really tonight what I'm supposed to do is tell my story. And if you're new, if you guys don't mind, feel free to, you know, exempt yourself. And so how many people here are sober less than a year? You know, a few? Good meeting. So what we do here, and I'm sure even if you're not sober that long, you've probably been around AA for a little while, in case you haven't. What we do in these speaker meetings is we usually tell our story, and I'm not totally sure why that works, but when I was new, I went to meetings where people told their stories, and I'm all right now, so maybe it's good. You know, the best logic I can put together for why we tell our stories to each other. I used to be pretty hopeless, just like a sloppy, sad, dejected drunk, and my life sucked. And even when I sobered up, it was still, actually, you know, it seemed a lot of times it was actually worse when I was sober. You know, I mean, I wasn't making the drunken messes that I was making when I was drunk, but at least when I was drinking, I would get these short periods of fun and relief, you know. And that's kind of, you know, when I came to AA, that's what I brought. And I'll get into that in a minute here. So when I got here, I was looking for help. And I was open-minded and I was desperate. And I met some people who used to be just like I was, but they weren't anymore. They'd gotten better. And that's who helped me, you know. And I followed their instructions. We have a book. I'm sure you guys all know that. There's like these steps laid out in the book, and they're called steps because it's things we do. They're not called the 12 lessons that we learned. You know, they're the 12 steps that we took. And I got a sponsor, and the sponsor helped me through the steps, and we used the book as the guide. And I did the best I could. I followed the directions as best I could, and life started getting a little better. They shoved me out the door to try and find people who needed the message so I could carry it to them. And I did a terrible job at it, but I did a terrible job consistently because I was doing it consistently. And you know, that all started a little over 13 years ago. I haven't had a drink since. I'm 33. I quit drinking when I was 20. Never had like a legal drink in the bar. From what I understand, I'm not missing much. And so somehow through the course of my story, like I got better. I was hopeless. I was desperate. And now I'm pretty content. You know, in fact, you know, as cheesy as this sounds, like I'm pretty excited to be alive. This is quite a time to be alive for me. There's a lot of cool things happening. Some of them are on the outside, but most of them are on the inside. You know, my life gets lighter, brighter, easier, more fun. So I have no idea exactly what caused that, right? But something in my story happened, and now I'm better. So with that in mind, like, I'll do my best to give you guys the most realistic and truthful version of my story. So in case the path I took is the one that you should be taking, like, hopefully that's the story you'll hear, okay? So with that being said, you know, before I even started drinking, like, I was just a weird kid. You know, and I hear this a lot in AA. I was a weird kid. I didn't look weird. I didn't even act that weird, but I was weird. And you know, I remember being, I don't know, fourth or fifth grade and standing outside on the first day of school. And the way we did it at my school is you line up outside on the playground behind your teacher. So you go there, you have a piece of paper that says who your teacher is. You ask around and you find your teacher and then you stand in line. So I'm standing in line outside with my book bag on, just a normal, plain kid. And I'm looking across the playground at this other kid. And there's nothing spectacular about him. He's not super good looking. He's not really tall or short or doesn't have a lot of people hanging out with him. He's just a regular kid, just like me. And for some reason, when I was looking at him, I was having this thought that if tomorrow morning when I woke up, I could be him instead of me, that all my problems would be solved. And I'm in fifth grade. I'm like 10 years old. And I'm thinking how much it sucks to be me and how badly I wanted to be someone else. That was just how my life was. Everywhere I looked around me, I saw people. It was easier for them. They had it better. You know, there was nothing wrong with me. My parents were awesome. The household I grew up in was awesome. I was never beaten, molested, neglected, abused. You know, I just, like, I had it made, and I hated it. And I have no idea where that comes from. You know, every night at my house, we'd have, you know, bedtime. My parents were responsible parents. I got an older brother, younger sister. They tried to corral us up to bed at a certain time, usually around 9 o'clock. And, you know, I hated that. It was the worst part of my day every day. Because at 9 o'clock, I'd have to go upstairs in my room alone in the pitch dark and the dead silence. And I'd have to wait until I fell asleep. And my head would start going 100 miles an hour. And I would just be thinking about the craziest stuff. It didn't even make sense that a 10-year-old shouldn't be thinking of. You know, why'd I get stuck with this face? You know, how come I'm not allowed to wear baggy or pants? Why do my parents hate me? You know, and I remember sitting there thinking, like, what's going to happen after I die? And freaking out. I remember one night I was laying there thinking, like, you know, I had broken my arm skateboarding. And I was like, man, I broke my arm. It's a pretty serious injury. It hurt pretty bad, but it didn't hurt that bad. And I was thinking, you know, statistically, I'll probably get hurt way worse than that at least once in my life. And then I'm, like, panicking about how bad I'm going to get hurt. Man, who knows? Could be a car accident. Or I get my arm ripped off or something. And I'm laying in bed, 10 years old, sweating, heart pounding, buried under the blankets because God knows if one little foot poked out, I don't know what was going to get me, but it was going to get me. So I'd suck it back in, and I would just sit there and breathe the air I just exhaled. And, like, man, it would just suffer, and I would wait. You know, every night I would try and turn the bathroom light on, leave my door open, leave my brother's door open so I could hear him snoring, you know what I mean? Anything to comfort me. Every single night was like that for me when I was a kid. And I don't know where I get that from. In my first year anniversary, I was sober a year. My parents were there, and I was telling that story. And afterwards, my mom came up to me, like, heartbroken, like, eyes all glassy. And she says, Scotty, you couldn't sleep when you were a kid? I was like, no, never, not a single night. And she was like, why did you never say something to us about that? You know, I'm looking at my mom like, I don't know. I have no idea. Like, it's the way I was. I just sat there and, like, I don't know. It was a normal life for me. It seemed totally normal. I never once thought, like, something seriously wrong here. I should seek help. Maybe my parents. Maybe I should tell my guidance counselor at school or my best friend or something. I just never. It was just the way it was. And I just tried to play it off like I was normal. That was every day for me. And so when I got into high school, or just before, sometime around there, you know, I was just kind of exploring my options, seeing what was out there, and a couple buddies had started drinking, and I had never drank before. And we tried to drink this one night. It was my first drink ever. And we weren't old enough to get alcohol, but my buddy's sister was. So we sent her to the liquor store with like $10, and she comes back with some booze. Now, we couldn't get it from that day, so we had to wait a day. Now, it's like June or July in Maryland. It gets hot. You know, so here's my booze sitting in the back of her old beater car in the June sun all day, and by the time she finally gets to it, I have a warm, and I don't mean like a room temperature warm, I mean like a hot, full 40-ounce bottle of Old English 800 malt liquor. And here we are, ambitious, thinking I'm going to get drunk tonight. I remember twisting that cap off and going, just got it just near my lips, and was like, just when the smell kind of... and every time I try to drink it, I could feel that invisible hand pushing it back up. It's going, and we didn't get drunk. We tried hard, man. We were just taking sips. We were holding the nose. We were doing everything we could. Just didn't get drunk. So, you know, we failed. But we still were determined. And so, like, a few minutes later, we went and got a one-gallon, a plastic bottle gallon of Rickolov vodka with a little plastic pourer on it. And we didn't really understand how liquor worked. That's clearly too much. But we decided we were just going to get, like, 2 more gallons of orange juice, and we were just going to keep making cocktails until we could stomach it. Sure enough, we got the ratio down, and we started drinking. And I'm at my parents' house. They're asleep. We're being sneaky. We're downstairs playing Nintendo, drinking our little screwdrivers. And I got drunk. Nothing spectacular happened the first time I got drunk. All the normal stuff happens, right? Like, my shoulders dropped a little bit. I was super comfortable in my chair. I got really good at whatever Nintendo game we were playing. And when I got tired, I was like, hey, man, it's time for bed. And so I put my buddy on the couch, and I went upstairs, you know, 13, 14 years old. And I shut my door, I turned off the light, and I laid down and put my head on the pillow, laying on top of my blankets, and I fell asleep like a man falls asleep. You know, not like some scared little kid breathing in the air. He just exhaled, you know. I wasn't sitting there, head wasn't running. Man, I just went to sleep. And it wasn't a big deal until I woke up the next morning and I realized for the first time in my life I slept like a normal human being. You know, and that really got my attention. Man, this is powerful stuff. And so this is the first time in my life that I just had a little taste of, you know, how amazing alcohol is for me personally. Like, it's a problem solver. And, you know, I just kept drinking. I tried to drink every chance I could get. You know, I remember the first time I drank at a little party, like, it was a few of us, me and some friends got together, and I wasn't, I never really one of, like, the cool kids. I was always kind of one of the weird ones off to the side. And my MO at a party would be, I would sit there, and sure enough, like, some kid would walk in who was way cooler than me, and I would see how cool he was, and I would just sit there and think, God, that kid is cool. I need to be like that kid. If only I was like that kid. It was weird stuff. Like, this one time we're at this party, and this kid walks in with a flannel shirt on, and he didn't have the button on the sleeves button. I don't know why I fixated on that, but I was like, damn, that's cool. For the next 3 years, you would never see me out without a flannel shirt with the sleeves unbuttoned, and I'd be rocking it like, man, I love that kid. And he came in carrying a case of beer, and I was just like, God, that kid is cool. So everywhere I went, I tried like a case of beer with my sleeves hanging down over my knuckles. I'm like, oh, yeah. And, you know, I got drunk at this party, and normally when I sit there at a party and look around and wish I could be somebody else, like, for the first time ever, I'm with this big group of people, and I finally speak up, tell a couple jokes, nail them. Everyone's like, man, that's pretty funny. I'm like, damn straight. You didn't even know. I've been here all quiet this whole time, like a sleeper. You know, and sure enough, I was like the center of attention for the first time ever, and I wasn't nervous and I wasn't scared. And it was the first time I'd ever looked around the room and got the feeling that a lot of these people would kill to be me. You know, This is the first time. I never felt that before. And I was proud, I was happy, I was comfortable, and I loved it. And I had a blast with my friends, man. Just sitting around talking. Like, we didn't even do much that night. Didn't get in any trouble. You know, like, these are my sort of my building experiences, and looking back in hindsight, like, I'm a screwed up kid, and alcohol is insanely powerful at fixing what's ever wrong with me. And so later in life, when I became this sloppy, disgusting drunk on the brink of death, and I'll get into that in a minute here, but and people told me, like, you have a drinking problem, you have to stop drinking. Like, for me, all I could think was, like, that can't be it. That's the only thing that ever makes things right for me. Like, it has to be something else. There has to be some other way. So people were like, you got to stop drinking. And I remember thinking, like, I'm never going to stop drinking. Now, there was actually one point where, you know, I got in a lot of trouble, and so I did. I quit. Like, I'm never going to do this again. Too much trouble. I got scared. I had a girlfriend. She left. My parents found out. It was a big deal, and I felt terrible. And I was like, you know, I'm a good person. I'm never going to drink again. And, you know, I already graduated high school by this point, and I took that time to, and I got a job, and then I got a second job, and I saved up some money, and I bought this little two-door BMW, and then I moved into my parents' house, and had this awesome apartment. Got into college. It's a community college, but, you know, I made my first dean's list, so I was getting awesome grades. And one of the jobs I had was these investors. They had a bunch of money, and they just invested in places and made money off their money, and I was their little office clerk. And I didn't have an important job, but they really liked me. You know, I don't know why they liked me, but they liked me. And they had all these plans for me, and they were guiding me through college, saying, take these business law classes, you know, maybe start looking at getting your MBA down the road. And, like, they were kind of talking like they wanted to eventually pull me into the business. And I'm like this middle to lower middle class suburban kid, and these guys are throwing millions of dollars around. I'm like, man, like, it's all really coming together. I'm not drinking. And at the end of all that, I had everything. I had the apartment, the car, the girl came back. I had this awesome job, the great grades. My parents were happy. My neighbors were happy. My friends were happy. My brother and sister were happy. All my parents' church friends were happy. Everybody was so happy for me because my whole life was coming together. And I just remember being completely empty inside. Completely empty inside. Had nothing. No reason to get up in the morning. I had everything I wanted. I designed my life to be exactly the way I thought it would need to be in order for me to be happy. I made that happen. Think about that. I still got ideas right now. I know everybody else here does too. If only I could get this. If only I could get this. If I could fix up the outside enough, then I'll be okay on the inside. I still believe that a lot, right? And I believed it then. And I fixed it all up, and I was not okay on the inside. And I drank again. I mean, like, people are like, oh, you relapse. I'm like, not really, man. Like, it was a triumphant return to my home. You know, like I was coming back from war. Like, I went out, I accomplished all these things, and I finally get to come home and reward myself. Man, I got drunk. I got super drunk off a bottle and a half of Strawberry Hill flavored Boone's Farm wine, and alone in my room, sitting there drinking my Boone's Farm, like 19 years old, thinking to myself, like, I've arrived. Like, this is it. 7 months of grinding, and now it finally pays off. I got to get drunk. So this is what alcohol means to me. Like, you guys, like, follow that. Does that make sense, anybody? It's important. I need it. There's nothing in my life that comes close to how amazing it is to just get hammered. That's it. That's what I've been looking for. So I continue on like that for about a year, you know, actually close to 2 years. In the course of those 2 years, I've picked up some like super violent drug habits and started selling a lot of drugs to pay for my drugs. And so I was kind of owed a lot of money to a drug dealer and you know, uppers to go with the booze, and then booze to help with the detox from the cocaine, and like a little bit of meth thrown in, some ecstasy pills, and like, man, I smoke weed every day. I hate weed. I smoke it every single day. And every time, maybe it's a spark of a bowl. I'm like, you in? I'm like, hell yeah. And like, within a minute, like, still blowing the smoke out, I'd be like, damn, why'd I do that? Like, I hate being stoned. Every day. You know, it came to the point where I was pretty much all by myself. I'd scared away my family and my friends, and I'm sitting in this apartment, and it's all crashing down around me, right? There's an eviction notice on the door because I'm taking my roommate's rent. I'm spending it on booze and drugs, and the repo man's looking for my BMW, and I'm parking it, you know, two neighborhoods away because I know he's looking two blocks away, you know? And I had withdrawn from all my classes two semesters in a row, which gets you kicked out of school. I didn't know that, or else I wouldn't have done it. But I thought I was getting one over on, because like, I didn't fail. I withdrew, which is somehow better. And I was going to get fired from that one awesome job I had. I knew, because they've been catching me getting sloppy, smelling like booze, leaving little baggies around and stuff. You know, it all just came crashing down. And towards the very end, I remember sitting there with a bottle of liquor and whatever drug was on the agenda that night, and I remember thinking to myself, like, I could die at any second, and I just take another shot, do another line. Like, I had no mental defense against like accidentally killing myself. Like, that's where I was. So I end up back at my mommy's house, and she's gonna save me, and her and my dad's still together, and she's got this great job in D.C. She works at this office building, this magazine production company, and she gets me a job at her work. She tells me it's gonna be okay if I just get my life together, quit drinking. By this time, I desperately want to quit drinking, even though I hate being sober just as much as I hate being drunk, but it hurts so bad, you know. And I was just turning out to be such a loser that I just wanted to stop and try to do like I did the first time. Remember, I quit, and I got it all together, but now I couldn't quit. You know, I'd make it a day or two, and then I would change my mind. You know, people are always like, you're like, oh, you drink against your will. I'm like, what does that mean? Am I literally yelling at my hand, like, no, no? Is it like pouring the booze into my mouth? Like, it never happened that way. You know, for me, it was just I changed my mind. I always change my mind. So I'd be like, I'm going to quit drinking. I'm done forever. I never want to do this again. And as soon as I started feeling better, maybe a day, maybe two, maybe 3 days, I'm like, you know what? I think I learned my lesson. I'll control it a little better from now on. And I would just start again. And as soon as I started, it was off the races. I couldn't control it once I started. And even when I stopped, I couldn't control staying stopped. I had no say in whether or not I was drinking. I was just drinking or not. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm lucky today. Maybe not. And so I was kind of in that condition. My mom's bringing me to her work. I get there on Monday. I'm nervous. I'm freaking out. I'm probably detoxing a little bit. And I stay sober Monday, and I just try and follow the instructions. They give me some little jobs to do, organize the stock room, you know, don't make a mess, don't get in anybody's way. You know, I do it. I do it in a day. And I come back Tuesday, and they're like, man, I can't believe you got that whole thing done in a day. And they're like, well, try this and try this. And they gave me some other work to do. And so I'm doing pretty good. Wednesday rolls by. By the time I'm you know, end of the day on Thursday, they set aside a little office for me on the fifth floor. And they're like, this is your office. And they're getting the computer ready for me. And they got this really, really cool work for me to do. And they're like, you know, usually we don't have interns do this kind of work, but you've been so awesome that we're really confident that you can do it. And I'm like, you know, things are finally starting to look up. And I've been sober 4 days at this point. You know, the shaking's starting to go away. I'm not jonesing so bad. And then comes Friday. And I get to work. I ride in with my mommy, the way we do. And she goes to her office on the third floor. I go to mine on the fifth. And at this point, I'm like vibrating in my chair. Like, I'm desperate. And I want to go get drunk, but I'm in D.C. I don't know where the liquor store is. Even if I did know where it was, I was only 20 years old. I had my brother's driver's license. He's older than me. That's how I got booze. But I didn't have it with me. They had taken it. You know? And so I'm sitting there desperate, and I didn't know what to do, and I ended up coming across this a box of cans of, like, compressed computer cleaner stuff. Oh, I see you're familiar with it. And so I just go to town on this thing, man. I get that little tube in and start, and I completely black out. You know, I'm doing it so much that a big layer of ice forms around the can. The thing stuck to my hand. I start puking everywhere. I get up. I'm running around the office, running, like sprinting in an office building, vomit on my shirt, run into one of the copiers, break it, dash into the bathroom because they're looking for me, and fall asleep on the counter, not even like in the stall. Fall asleep on the counter. I get jolted awake when some dude comes in and is like, what the fuck? And I'm like, oh, and so I run out of there. And I cause this big scene, and like, it's not a big office building, but like, they couldn't catch me for a little while. So I'm just like running around, occasionally making pit stops at my office, like reload, and then we'll just keep going. And like, you know, it is a funny story. But man, so like, I looked up what I had done later, and like, I definitely did enough to kill me. There's like a lot of recorded deaths from that kind of like desperation drug use, and people are like huffing and stuff. And this is a funny story. So I got caught, obviously, and it was a big deal, and we'll get to that in a second. But I never really got caught red-handed doing drugs, right? So I got caught drinking a lot. Drinking is my baby. Like, that's my thing. But I did a lot of drugs too, right? And I never got caught red-handed doing drugs, except for two times. Once when I was like 14, before I ever even drank that much, I was working at Baskin Robbins, and we had these spent whipped cream canisters. And I would take them all home at the end of the night in a big trash bag, hide them in my room, and then before I went to sleep, I would, you know, huff them all down, and I would fish out on my bed. And I was passed out, and my mom came up and found me with all these whipped cream cans. She was like, oh my God. And she couldn't believe what I was doing, because they're like nice conservative Christian people. And she freaked out, and you know, it took a while for that to settle down. And then I never got caught red-handed again for another like 6 years until this day at her office. So like, I'm an alcoholic. I drink. The drink is my baby. But if you ask my mom, like, I'm not a huffer. But according to my mom, like, that's all she knows that I've ever done. That's all she's ever caught me doing. Did you tell them about your huffing problem? And I'm like, Mom, I did it two times. She's like, oh, I just so happened to catch you the only two times. I'm like, yes, that just happened. I'm a sloppy huffer. Like. So I get in trouble here. I'm in my mom's work. Everyone's technically a sloppy huffer. I've never met a neat huffer. So I'm at my mom's work, and I come to, right? And this is a nightmare for me because I'm all about keeping it together on the outside. I don't want people knowing the mess I'm in. I don't want people knowing the trouble I'm in. I don't want people knowing who and how I really am. I hate that. I hide it as best I can. And getting caught drunk is no big deal. It's just some good old boy stuff. Like, everybody drinks. You know, they write songs about it. But getting caught doing this type of thing was low for me. And I come to it in the CEO of the company's office. It's actually a husband and a wife. They own the company. They run the company. They got about 100 employees. And so I come to, and I look over, and my mom's there, and she's crying. She's sobbing her eyes out. And I look over, and I see the boss and his wife, and they're both crying. And I'm just like, I said, I've got vomit on my shirt, a couple bruises, cuts. I'm just like, what the hell happened? And, you know, my mom's boss was like, you know, they told her, they're like, you're sending him away. He's going away for treatment somewhere. I had never, ever sought help, ever. This is just like when I was a little kid. I don't know what is wrong with us, right? But I never once asked for help. I just thought I could fix it myself, and I always tried to fix it myself. Even now in my life, like, I don't want to ask for help. Man, I got problems. I got things that probably aren't great. You know, I got a little bit of debt. I'm engaged. We fight a lot. You know, these things that by nature I don't want to ask for help with. You know, but I know better these days. Like, I know to speak up. But back then I didn't know. So trying to fix it myself, that's how I ended up like coming out of a blackout covered in vomit in my mom's work in front of her CEO in his office. Like that's where that got me trying to do it on my own. So they sent me away. Rehab was cool. If you can do it, great. If not, that's fine. It's really not necessary. I went to rehab, and really what it was they plucked me out of my chaotic life, and they like put me in this safe environment for 4 weeks, right? And it was cool. There was therapy, and the food was all right. They had like, you know, a little basketball court. It was nice. It was down in Florida. I was only there for 4 weeks. And, you know, I was in therapy every single day, my therapy, we were there for a 3-hour group session, 1-hour solo session, and an hour with a psychiatrist. They prescribed me a ton of meds, and they were doing all this, like you write the letter, but then you burn it, and then you have an empty chair, and you imagine a person that you really don't like is in a chair. You yell at them even though they're not there. Like this, you know, it's just stuff you do to help with your emotions and things. And it was pretty cool, I guess. I left there 4 weeks later just as confused and as terrified as I was when I showed up. The only difference was I had 4 weeks under my belt. I wasn't detoxing anymore. My head was a little clearer. And I was going home. And on the way out, there was this one counselor there who was in AA. And he told me, you know, he was like, Scott, you know, a lot of people that are leaving, I like to have a little talk with them. I want you to know that, like, you've done a good job, and you're sober 4 weeks now. But there's two things that you absolutely have to do when you leave here if you even want a shot at surviving. And I remember thinking, man, that's a little extreme, you know what I mean? But all right, like, what are they? And he said, you have to start going to meetings every day, and you have to get a sponsor. And he told me, that's not enough, but that's enough to get you started. Because if you do these two things right, then the rest should take care of itself. You know, and I took him seriously, man. I really didn't want to be the way I was. I desperately wanted to be different than how I was. And so I get out of rehab, and I fly back home to Maryland, and went to a meeting that night. You know, I looked up, I think at the time, this was like 13 years ago, so the internet wasn't really as awesome as it is today, but I got home and we called the intergroup office, and I found out where the closest meeting to my house was, and I went to it. So here I am in my first AA meeting out of rehab, and it's like 4 or 5 older people, one lady's knitting, you know, and I just remember thinking, like, knitting is so lame, dude, this guy was up front, and he was talking about, he goes, so I'm mowing my lawn today, right? And everybody's like, uh-huh. He's like, so I usually do back and forth pattern, but I decided to do diagonal pattern. And I'm like, okay. And he says, halfway through, my mower ran out of gas, and my gas tank was empty. And I didn't really have enough time to go to the store, so now my lawn is half mowed on the front left and half unmowed on the back right, and it looks ridiculous, but I didn't have to drink today, and that makes me a winner. And I remember fresh out of rehab thinking to myself, like, nuh-uh. I don't think that makes you a winner, dude. Like, it's just the kind of stuff you see in AA, and it's not a big deal. He didn't do anything wrong. He was just probably giving the best he had. I mean, I was brand new. He's probably like, we've got to say something to help this new guy. And that was just all he had at the time, right? So I listened to that guy, and by the end of the meeting, I was bored out of my mind. And this was before we had, like, Angry Birds and stuff and phones with big screens on them. And so, like, you really just had to sit there and listen. And I remember by the end of the meeting, I was, like, watching this lady knit, thinking to myself, like, it does look kind of fun. You could literally make anything out of it. And so AA sucked, right? I went to AA, and it sucked. First night out of rehab. But I was absolutely determined to stay sober. And I took so seriously what that guy said. He said, you have to go to meetings. You have to get a sponsor. I'm doing this. And so there wasn't a second thought, right? I went to another meeting the next night. It was just as bad. Another meeting the third night, it was just as bad. And I remember thinking to myself, this is what AA is about. AA is about your life's going to suck forever, but you're not going to drink because it's the right thing to do. And somehow that is respectable. So that's what I'm going to do. You know, and looking back, like, I wouldn't have survived. I don't think I would have survived a month of that. But the fourth day, I went back. I told you I had a second job. That was at a restaurant. That's at the Olive Garden in Bowie. And I was a waiter. and the general manager of that restaurant, the restaurant was chaos. It was just a chaotic place to be. And the general manager was this little 5'1" guy, you know, 95 pounds, bowl cut, chipped front tooth, squeaky voice, Pittsburgh accent. Anybody from Pittsburgh? It's a weird accent. And I just remember, so this dude didn't drink, and I just remember when I was around him, like, this guy had whatever I was missing. This dude was confident. He was happy. He was content. He was effective, man. I mean, he managed that chaotic pressure. Nobody messed with this dude. Not because they were scared of him, but you couldn't BS him. You couldn't. He saw right through it every time. Like, I would try to lie to him. He'd be like, well, that's not right, is it? And I'd be like, no. That's a lie, isn't it? I'd be like, yeah. He'd be like, I'm not mad. And I'd be like, oh. We'd be drinking the wine and stuff. So I wanted to be just like this dude. And he didn't drink, and I always thought that was super cool that he didn't drink. And I remember when that guy told me, you got to go to meetings, you got to get a sponsor. Like, the only person I could think of was my general manager at the Olive Garden, but, like, I was pretty sure he wasn't an AA, because, like, especially now, because, like, I've met these AA people, and they don't have it together like this guy has it together. But anyway, I go back to that restaurant because I got, like, a couple paychecks left over, and if any of you ever waited tables, the paychecks are, like, $11. That's not a lot of money, but I still wanted them. And so when I get there, I remember thinking, I made a special trip to the back of the restaurant to try and see if this dude Chad, my general manager, see if Chad was there. And he is. He's in the office. So I go back there, and he's like, oh, my God, we thought you died. Where have you been? And, you know, I still don't have a lot of awesome stories to tell. And so I was very proud to say I've been at rehab because, like, for the first time I had a little bit of street cred for, like, one thing. And so I was like, I was at rehab? I bet you didn't even know I partied that hard. But I did. And he's like, how you doing? And I was, like, super dramatic. Like, I was on a VH1 special. I was like, well, you know, it's hard, and the odds are stacked against me, but, you know, uphill battles are my forte. And I was trying to be, like, super cool, and he was just like, what the hell are you talking about? But I think he, like, sensed that I was going to die soon. And he stood up and he closed the door to the office. It was just me and him standing in this little tiny restaurant office. Looks me dead in the eye, and he says, Scott, I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't felt it necessary to take a drink in close to 4 years. Now, I'm going to a meeting tonight, and I'd love it if you came with me. There's some things I'd like to talk to you about. And me, I could have melted right on the floor, dude. I'm like, oh, my God. This dude's an AA? This dude? No way. Like, it just didn't make sense to me that somebody that, like, decent and worthy to be looked up to could be an AA. That was foreign to me. Like, I met dudes in AA. They get upset when their lawn looks weird. I went with him. I was like, yeah, I'm in your car. Like, yes, please. And so I get in his car. He drives me, like, almost an hour north to this meeting in Parkton, Maryland. It's the Parkton Step Group. Used to meet on Monday nights. It's not around anymore. And so I get in his car. We head up there. And on the ride up, he starts talking to me, right? Just a regular, like, you're not preaching to me. He's not, like, interrogating me. He's just talking to me. So, how you doing? I said, yeah, I think I'm okay. And he started asking me, this is how you know, like a good sponsor. He started asking me yes or no questions because he knew I was full of BS, you know. So he starts asking me all these yes or no questions. And if I tried to answer more, he would stop me right away and let me know that was a yes or no question. And I'm like, oh, sorry. So he asked me about my drinking. He says, when you start drinking, you know when you're going to stop. And I thought about it. I was like, no. I plan on stopping, and I never quite stop when I plan on stopping. He says, when you're stopped, do you know when you're going to start again? And I started thinking back, and all those times I swore I'd never drink again, and I meant it, and I always drank again. And I said, no. When I've stopped, I don't know when I'm going to start again. And he asked me, he's like, are you open-minded to, like, the God idea? Does that freak you out? And I was like, man, a little bit. Like, I kind of think it's for stupid people, but, like, you know, I'm open-minded. I mean, my life's a mess. Clearly, I'm doing something wrong. You know, I mean, anything you could tell me about it would be appreciated. He's like, what are you willing to do to stay sober? And I was like, look, man, I got nothing. I have nothing left. I'm like a loser version of, like, a crappy me right now. Like, I have nothing. Every time I get momentum, I destroy it. And I was like, I'm willing to do absolutely anything, man. Anything, like, if it makes you better. And he tells me, he's like, so here's the deal with AA. He said, I'm going to bring you to a meeting. It's going to be a lot of people that you're probably going to think have a lot going for them, and you're right, they do. He says, if you want to be like them, always keep this in mind. He says, you do what we do, and you will get what it is that we have. You know, and I was like, okay, like, I remember that. And sure enough, we get to the meeting, doors open. Man, it was a bunch of young people, some old people, you know, all races, all ages, men, women. It was a big group. It was probably like 50, 60 people in there, and nobody was like out of control. There weren't these awesome cliques giving you like the murder stare, and everybody was just super cool, and they were nice to me, and they were nice to each other. And I mean, there was no like, you know, I don't know, like, you just knew, like, when you walked in, like, it was a little different. I grew up going to church, man, and like, when you walk into the church, you want to make sure you got your Sunday best on, make sure everybody knows that you didn't sin this week, not this last Sunday. And you walk in there, you just keep it very quiet, and you don't talk about it. Like, man, I looked at porn for like 8 hours yesterday. Like, you just don't talk about that. You walk in the church, it's your A game. And like, you come into AA, and you're like, he probably smoked crack. Like everybody knows when you walk in, you're like, look at this loser. And so everybody had that attitude. No one thought they were better than me. Everybody was just cool. And you could tell they loved each other. And you could tell there was something there that was worth having. And so, you know, I got comfortable in my chair, and I listened. And this kid spoke, and you know, he was like my first speaker I ever heard. And me and him are like really close today, and we've been through some really cool stuff together. And you know, he did a good job speaking. I remember during the whole like 40 minutes he spoke, he mentioned once, like briefly, that he went to rehab in Florida. And I'm like, I went to rehab in Florida. Oh my God, that's God. You know, like, my sponsor's like, dude, everybody goes to rehab in Florida. It's like all rehabs in Florida. I was like, oh. And on the ride home, I asked that guy. I was like, hey, look, like I really need a sponsor. Like, and you know, would you be my sponsor? And it was just weird. Again, like, I'm not an ask for help type of guy. Like, not because I'm like too proud. It's because I'm too scared. You know, like, I just don't. Sometimes it's as dumb as like, well, what if I sound weird asking? You know, like, better not ask them. So you could die, but at least you won't sound weird. And so I asked him on the ride home, and I was like, you know, will you sponsor me? And so he's like, yeah. He said it'd be an honor, and he starts talking about this four step. And I'm like, four step? I'm like, why are we starting off on the four step? And he's like, well, we're not starting off on the four step. He's like, the whole ride up here, we were talking about powerlessness. When you start, you don't know when you're going to stop, you don't know when you're going to start. You have no power over that. You know, unmanageability. You know, he's like, even if you're paying your bills, like, are you content? Are you happy? I'm like, no. Nah. And he's like, so you can't even manage to be happy. How manageable is your life? I'm like, touche, sir. And he's like, you're open-minded to the God idea. That's all you need for step two. And you said you wanted to do anything. Let's test the theory. Let's do some stuff. You know, so here we are on this car ride up here. He's walking me through these first three steps without my permission, without me even knowing that's what he was doing. I don't even think he realized that's what he was doing. I think it was just a natural course of conversation when you get a desperate drunk who needs help in the same car with a recovered drunk who knows how to help. It's a natural thing that he starts to share his experience helping me out. And I went through the steps with this man, and things started to get better. Okay, and I'm not talking about, oh, I suddenly made a bunch of money, and then, like, I got this awesome house. Like, none of that happened. And in fact, I went broke in sobriety. I ended up moving to York, PA, and splitting a three-bedroom apartment above, like, this Jamaican bodega that I'm pretty sure was, like, a weed front. And I was living with, like, Fat Rick, the pot-smoking tattoo artist, who said he was sober but never stopped smoking pot. And Amish Dave, the methadone addict, who's on, like, a 3-year rum springer, and I'm just like, dude, like, you guys are supposed to be sober. I'm living in this apartment with them. We're going to meetings every night, like, trying to help where I can. And you know, as I'm starting to get a taste of this, like, I make my way through the steps. I make some amends. I'm doing some of the 10 and 11 stuff. You know, for those of you who are brand new, you know, we do this inventory. We take a hard look at ourselves. We make some amends. You know, we clean up some of the mess we've made. And then we kind of seek God a little bit internally, a little prayer, a little meditation. We try and make sure we stay fresh with this new way of life. And I was doing all that, and I was feeling a lot better. I was like, man, this is really great. Like, I love going to these meetings with you guys. It had been like 5 or 6 months. And that's when my sponsor was like, get out of my car. I'm like, what are you talking about? Get out of your car, man. Like, my sponsor, like, this is why I'm sober. And he's like, you're not going to stay sober riding in my car. He's like, you got to put somebody in your car. You've got to go out and try and carry this message. And I remember thinking, look, I was like 5, 6 months sober. I'm not telling people like, hey, forget the steps, man. Just go help people. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying I've been through the steps. I had an experience with recovering from alcoholism, and they were urging me to go out and carry the message, or else they didn't think I would make it. So they were telling me pretty much that the 12th step is as important as anything else I would do. In fact, they were pitching it as if the 12th step was the end game and everything I had done up until then was just to prepare me for that work. And they shoved me out the door, man, and I was like, hey, I'm young, I'm early in sobriety, no one's going to listen to me. And if someone does listen to me, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that because I don't think I know what I'm talking about. What if I kill them? You know, and they were like, man, that's none of your business. Just go carry the message. You know, he was like, don't make up some weird stuff and to tell them. Stick to the book. Stick to your experience. They were like, do you think you're recovered? And I was like, I do, man. I feel like I'm recovered. Like, I'm okay. Like, I don't want to drink all the time. I don't think that the drink is my only shot at a happy life. Like, I'm excited about being alive without drinking. Like, I'm enjoying what I'm doing right now. I'm like, I'm happy. Like, so you're better. So whatever you did, you need to bring exactly that because other people need it. And they shoved me out the door, man. I fought it kicking and screaming. I didn't want to. But I go out to these meetings every night. I'm looking for the guy standing by himself. I'm looking for, man, we just saw this. Did you guys see this super drunk dude outside? His name is Jeff. I tried to get him to come in here, but he didn't want to come in here. And he tried to guilt me because he dumped out his steel reserve because he was going to come to AA meeting. But I told him that was his problem. But it was like, find them. Find the drunks. Find the people who are lonely. Find the people who just got sober, who don't have any hope in their eyes. Find the people standing by themselves. Find the people who are lost. Find them. And just be with them, man. And just try and carry some of this message. I was like, well, what if they don't want me to sponsor them? He's like, who cares if they want you to sponsor them? If they want you to sponsor them. If not, help them anyway. Just do your best, man. So I went out to try and help. I'll never forget, man, this was the first dude I ever got to, like, first dude to ever ask me to sponsor, right? I'm like, oh, my God, like, yeah, like, I'll sponsor you, man. And we start going through the book. We're reading every page, every word. And I'm, like, picking it apart for him. And he's, like, he's nodding out pretty hard. And I'm like, well, that's okay. He's probably just tired from the DTs. And we keep going through the book. And he writes his fourth step. And, like, I'm walking over to do his fifth step. It's the first fifth step I've ever heard. I'm super nervous. I get there. Now he's nodding hard. He's drawing a little bit. He's got the tiniest pupils I've ever seen in my life. And he's like, okay. So we do his fifth step. And like that next night after his fifth step, I'm back at my home group on Monday night. I've been sober like 6 months at this point. And I'm standing there with my sponsor, Chad, and I'm telling him all about this dude. I'm like, man, I'm doing everything I can. I'm pouring my heart out. I got the book open. I was honest with him. I told him stuff from my fifth step that I never told anybody besides you. And I'm like, and here I am. I walked 12 blocks to get there, and I'm pretty sure he, like, shot 3 bags of dope before I walked in the door. I'm like, this guy's high. I know this stuff doesn't work if you're getting high. And I'm like, why is he even in AA? I don't even think he drinks. And I'm, like, freaking out about this dude, trying so hard to help him. And I'm looking dead at my sponsor. He's got this giant grin on his face. He's just looking at me smiling, wide-eyed, teeth showing. I'm like, what? What's so funny? I don't get it. He says, do you realize in the 6 months that I've known you? Now, we talk every day, right? Yeah, we talk every day. He says, in the 6 months that I've known you, this is the first conversation that you and I have ever had that wasn't about you. You only ever talk about you. He's like, do you see how much you've changed? Here you are running around worrying about this kid. You don't even know him, but you love him. Why are you so worried about him? I don't know, man. He's like, how are you doing? And I was like, I'm great. He's like, that's what it's about right there. You know? I'm not designed to sit around and think about myself. I'm not. I get miserable that way. I'm not designed to sit around and make me perfect and make my life perfect and make my bank account perfect and my house perfect. And like, I'll never be happy doing that. I've tried that. I still try it regularly. It never works. And I'm good at it. It's like the scary part. Like, I gotta make things happen. Never works. Always empty. Always empty. But when I get out and just take a little bit of the love inside of me. Man, they talk about the big book that says the fundamental idea of God is deep down inside every single one of us. I never believed that until the first time I saw the love in me find a way out to another person. That was the first time when I started to honestly believe all the way, yo, there is God inside of me, man. And it's powerful to experience that. Like, I say my prayers in the morning. You know, I pray now. And that's weird to me. I still, honestly, a lot of times when I'm praying, I'm like, this is ridiculous. Hello, sir. Like, and I don't know who I'm talking to, man. Like, it's hard for me sometimes. And I remember for a while I couldn't pray because I didn't think God was real. It just seemed weird, right? There's not a dude up there listening to me. And this old lady was like, well, maybe God is just love. And maybe when you talk to him, you're just talking to the love that exists in this world. And I was like, huh. She's like, maybe you should address him by his name, Love. And I started saying my prayers. I say, dear Love, you know, I'm on your team today. I'm here to do what you need me to do today. Love, whatever you are, use me. You know, and I would head out to try and do that, you know. And so, man, I got to help this kid. He, you know, I never saw him after a couple weeks after that. I don't know if I'll ever see him again. I don't remember his name. I barely remember his face. He might have died. He might have not. I don't know. But I went on, and there were others. And I remember I chased this thing to, like, Kensington, Philadelphia, which is, like, this really beat neighborhood. And me and my buddy sort of found this clubhouse. And there was – we wanted to help people, but everywhere we went, we're, like, the new guy. Like, there's nobody for us to help. But we found this place called The Last Stop on Kensington Avenue underneath the L. And we get there, and there's, like, all these people who are beat down. And they're like, this is Troy. Troy has 3 months. He's sober longer than everyone else in here. So he's like our old timer. And I just remember thinking, like, I may not be the best sponsor, but in this room I'm the best sponsor. And me and my buddy Mike, we were like, this is our home group now. We kept that our home group for 4 years. And we ended up getting a house in the hood right down the street from the clubhouse. And we were moving drunks in, and they destroyed our house. And, they took everything we had and squandered it. We had nothing left. And man, 4 years of that, just being right in the thick of it, right in the gutter trying to help drunks. And like, I'm telling you, who I am today, I think the majority of who I am today was built in those 4 years. And like, the more time I spend away from AA, away from helping people, I just lose a little bit of that. And that's who I want to be. That's who I love to be. You know. So I'm constantly trying to remember, like, this is what I'm here for. I'm here to let the love that's inside of me out. I'm here to try and find people to help. Right? So here's what's weird about all that. This is AA. I'm supposed to be talking about drinking all night, right? And how I don't drink now. Like, that's what I'm meant to be talking about. And it's weird that, you know, you may come to some meetings and you just hear people talk about God and spirituality and loving people and freedom and all that stuff. And like, you know, I used to think that was really weird, and I used to feel bad for doing that, because I'm like, y'all came to talk about drinking, and I feel like I'm doing the bait and switch. Like, here, I'm here. I'm supposed to talk about drinking. Instead, I'm talking about God and love and all this squishy stuff. And but if you look at the steps, the way they're written, you look at the first step, and we talk about, you know, we were powerless over alcohol. Alcohol, that's why we're here, right? And then in the rest of the steps, we never mention alcohol, we never mention drinking, we never mention being drunk, we don't even talk about it. We mention it one time. We say we're here because we can't stop drinking. Get over it. The answer to this problem is spiritual in nature. And we start going down these spiritual solutions, and we grow spiritually. And this booze problem tends to go away, and it did for me. Like, the booze problem went away very early. Like, I didn't want to drink anymore. And I was happy not drinking. I didn't want to drink. I think that, to me, is the craziest part. It's like, I always want to drink. Mm. I love to drink. I love to drink. Nothing compares to it. Why would I not want that anymore? You know, maybe because I found something that compares to it. Maybe I found something better, you know? So I didn't want to drink anymore. And if that's all I got from AA, then it would be worth it, especially considering it's free. But I didn't want to drink. Like, I was good. Like, I'm done now, right? It never stops there. Like, in AA, we solve the problem at the root. And they talk about that in the big book, right? They said we had to get down to causes and conditions. We had to find out what was the root of our failures, like what led to our failures. They don't say it was that we drank. Put the plug in the jug, all your problems go away. Like, no, they say self-centeredness is the root of the problem. They talk about self-centeredness as total separation from God. And if you want to find God, you've got to get rid of this self-centeredness. If you want to get rid of this self-centeredness, you've got to walk through this process. And through the process, you'll find what you're looking for. Now, I don't make any promises, I don't make any guarantees, but like, here's the deal. If you're new, and I know that some of you are, this is the way it works here. This is the way it worked for me. This is the part of my story that I want to come tell in the hopes that somebody else can get well too, right? I came here with an open mind, willing to do absolutely anything. And the people I found here never told me who God was, never told me, you know, what God wanted. All they told me was to open up my mind, look in my heart, and find out for myself, right? And I'm like, well, how am I supposed to find out? I said, clean up. Take an honest look at yourself. Be honest with someone else about it. Clear away your wreckage of the past. Clean up the mess that you made. Right? Try and regularly remind yourself that God is. And then go out and carry this message to the best of your ability. That's all they told me to do, right? They didn't say put the money in the basket. They didn't say give Bill Wilson the recognition. Like, you know, praise Dr. Bob. They never said run around, get an AA tattoo. They never said, like, go on the news and preach AA. Like, they don't even care. I'll say, I hate AA. Sometimes they're like, that's cool too. You should still help people. I mean, I got to tell you, sometimes I hate AA. We were talking on the ride up here, like, you know, you catch me on a normal day, like, I'm not a big fan of AA meetings. I go to a lot of AA meetings, but I'm not a big fan of AA meetings. Like, a few of you tonight will leave and be like, that speaker sucked. And like, I'm not even mad because I know that feeling. Like, God, what a waste of an hour that was. And like, so the meeting is cool, but the meeting's purpose is for the drunk who needs help to find the drunk who's willing to help him. Because that's how both of them get well. We've got to find each other. Well, if we're going to find each other, maybe we should put it out there that there's a meeting place. So that's why we meet here. So like, being a speaker is all right, but like, that's not the big show. The big show is before the meeting, after the meeting, the car ride, the phone call you'll get tomorrow from a dude who was here today who was like, hey, like, I'm really interested in what you guys are doing. Like, that's AA. Like, the meeting is just, it's like a conversation starter, you know? And so, if you knew you come to AA, your life's a mess, like, welcome. Our life's a mess. Like, we are as bad, if not worse, than you are now, or were. Like, we've been there. Like, that's our story. Like, this ain't church, man. Like, we walk in. I love my church, but, like, we walk in, and we're like, yeah, we're screwed up. Like, you know, you name it, I've done it. And honestly, like, some of it, I'm probably still dabbling. I don't drink anymore. I don't do any drugs. And, like, I still screw up a lot. Like, God knows I've, you know, stolen a bit here and there, had to pay it back. Stolen a bit, haven't paid it back yet. Yelled at my mom for loving me too much. You know, got a fist fight with my older brother because I don't like his face. Like, I all this stuff. Like, it's the same face. Like, we're virtually identical. like, but for the most part, like, we're people just like you. So welcome. Find a person who's got what it is that you want, and always remember this one thing. You do what they did, you'll get what they had. AA, you do what we do, you'll get what we have. And if he's a good sponsor, he'll open the book, and I'll take you through the steps. That's all I got. Well, yeah.